All right, everybody, welcome back to the Something About Soccer podcast. I am Dill40K, Dylan, whatever you want to call me, and I am joined by my co-hosts to my right or your left, Bizarre Brigade. How you doing, man?
What's going on, guys?
And Pixelated Suits on my opposing side. How you doing?
Hello, everybody. Doing good.
And we are back to reminisce, go over whatever words you want to use, MLS match weeks 8 and 9, as well as all the surrounding news that we find interesting, you know, storyline wise that have been going on in the past 2 weeks. And I'm going to kick it off right at the start. It is more of the same for me and my team, the LA Galaxy. Very muddy. No one's cleaning us up. It's like we're wearing all white and we're playing down in
rainy day on the way home from school.
Yeah, we're playing Gold Cup in Guatemala or something, you know, and just getting pushed around.
Eunice Musa vibes.
I thought we were suffering solo as the only winless team, but Pix kindly reminded me that one of our neighbors to the north, CF Montreal, also are yet to win a game. Yep. So there's that 1-1 tie against Houston Dynamo, and then the other one that I couldn't even. Oh my god, a 1-0 loss to Austin FC. Jesus. Okay, let's get off that. Pix, how about the Red Bulls? How you feeling about them?
Yeah, not too great. So the last game that we had, we lost to DC United.
But who scored for you?
Chopo of a score for us.
Yeah,
I can't complain about that.
Proving the doubters.
Exactly. I bet CG will be happy about that one. Yeah. But yeah, no, we played pretty bad. DC United is a team that really hasn't been challenging us for the past couple years. So losing at home against them was terrible. And then the game before that was Orlando, who we had already beat at home. So we had already figured them out. We were actually trying a new system. But despite them getting a red card, we still weren't able to do anything. So just a lack of really being able to make anything. And just like, you know, Peglo played amazing against us for DC United. But despite that, we just weren't able to do anything. And the Chopo goal was more so luck than really anything.
I mean,
we aren't creating enough to, you know, make Chopo stand out, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So it's not all on him, but
sure.
Overall, we're not looking great.
Well, if Choupo-Moting has no haters, then Pix is dead. Biz, Minnesota United sitting. You know, we made fun of you at the start of the season, rightfully so, because of course we are Minnesota United, third place. But the last two games, how have those been? 2-0 draws.
I wrote on the document, we are the kings of expected goals right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of been like that throughout the season, and it's been really frustrating because I feel like we've just kind of went through our based on standings over the last 5 to 6. It's definitely the stretch of season where you feel like you should have really, I think, ran some solid results out with, you know, a string of some 3 points. We did it a little bit, but I mean, we're undefeated over our last, I think it's our last 6 now, if I'm not mistaken. But that still comes down to, I mean, you're either letting teams back in late and kind of losing concentration late in the games, or you're just not creating enough. And it's been just kind of a combination of that is like two separate sides of why we're dropping points. And the last two have been super frustrating. And I know I actually read, I felt like Doyle, who put out his kind of like MLS overview, for anybody that wants to follow MLS, like go and read, like if you want actual tactical insight and like understanding what teams are, like go read Doyle's stuff. Like that's a guy that
it's
like
really good on the MLS
watches
website.
You can tell he sits and actually watches the games and really breaks down the tape of it. And take it as somebody that, like, I mean, I go and attend all the Loons games that are at home. I watch all the away games. So it's like, you know, a genuine true like real deal fan that like has been taken in for years. And like he has my endorsement of like he knows the ins and outs of the team, which I think especially with us being in the Midwest, you can't always say that for, you know, when there's 30 teams in the league, that's really hard to say that like somebody actually has like the tactical acumen to be able to just kind of dive in and provide that analysis for people. But the biggest thing that he said a couple games back that made me kind of start to look out for it, and I agree with his breakdown of it, is the fact that we are so direct with the ball and we try to get out in transition. And it's a lot of teams have been I think early on in the season have been falling for it, for the fact that they're just taking possession because we're giving it to them. And we thrive out of possession with, you know, a lot of our runners and our creative playmakers and having those two elite strikers up top. But now the thing that has been challenging that Toronto and Dallas have thrown at us over these last two games is maybe playing a little bit more in a low block and saying, come and break us down. You can have the ball then. And you know, we're just not
cashing in
those. We don't want the ball. We're not doing enough with it. And I think we ended up, the Dallas game was, I mean, that one in general was pretty interesting, but there was so much XG for our side that was registered within the actual stadium. But I felt like the run of play didn't necessarily speak to what that actually looked like. And you know, I think there was like probably one genuinely big chance that we probably should have scored on, but Dallas just, I felt like had an awesome game plan and playing physical with us and, you know, not allowing our playmakers and our strikers to get on the ball, like maybe more on the short end of the field so we can start that build up. And I think the template right now is kind of out there on, you know, the things that we do really well. So it'll be interesting over these next couple, because I trust Ramsey and I feel like he's good at maybe making some tweaks. I feel like we already did it once this season when we were kind of in a similar issue in a rut out of the first few games, and I feel like he's tweaked a couple things tactically, and then we kind of went on this unbeaten run now. But it is a shame, because I mean these next three, we have Vancouver on Sunday, we have Austin still on the horizon, we have Inter Miami on the horizon, so it's like our schedule gets way more challenging in comparison to where we're at. So it feels a little bit like a missed opportunity with, you know, having Dallas without Lucho Acosta and Peter Musa come to town, and you were only able to get a point out of that. Toronto, who's been actually playing much better, honestly, like, it's been a couple draws, but I mean, they've been keeping clean sheets, which is not something they've done. So draws against teams like that, giving away points too. I mean, against the Galaxy and SKC in back-to-back weeks too, where it was late, like 90th minute equalizers for both, where it was just like, makes you want to pull your hair out. So I mean, if you just stack those games and you even take, like, you know, 3 points out of two of those out of the four, and you're sitting in first place right now. So it's always kind of the what if game, I feel like, always in MLS, because it's kind of, the margins are so slim, but it does make you kind of frustrated when you're that close to being in first place and kind of controlling the narrative and the fate of what the team looks like now. So yeah, we'll see what the direction looks like over the next couple here. But yeah, all in all, I'm excited with what it looks like, despite it not going great as of late.
Well, I know we joked about it earlier in the season that you were definitely going to get a Yeboah jersey if he continues his good form, but it looks like Tanny has overtaken him in the goal scoring department a little bit. So are you going to do one of those dual name, dual jerseys? In a way, at home, half-half.
Kelvin Oluwase.
Exactly. No,
Kelvin, I do feel like has had maybe a little bit of a dry spell over the last few games. So yeah. Tanny, I know we even said, I think early on one of the other episodes, that Tanny was maybe in a sophomore slump. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. Ever since that Canada call in and when he scored against the U.S., he's just been on fire. So he definitely looks Tanny of old from last season too. So that's good, because I do think it, you know, when you have two strikers, if one runs hot, that's always good. If both are running hot, that's great. So we'll wait and see. But yeah, Yeboah, I mean, he's, you know, upper percentile still. I think he's sitting in, what does he have now, 4 or 5 goals in total. So it's like, he's still amongst, you know, the league leaders in that with how hot of a start he had. And I mean, if you're looking at his advanced analytics too, he's like 95th percentile and like, you know, the shot attempts and the goals. So it's like, he's not doing anything necessarily wrong. He's in a little bit of a rut, I think, with play style too, with these teams maybe sitting and snuffing out our transition. So we'll see if we can figure out how to do it in possession. I think that's the homework assignment here over the next couple of weeks. We're hoping that changes.
All right. Well, much like the geography of our teams, west, east, and in the middle, that's kind of how our teams are sitting across this table. I'm really hoping the Galaxy catch up. Who do they play next? Maybe there's some hope there. Let me look really quick. Oh, the Portland Timbers.
Ooh, who have been also hot.
Been very good. So,
yeah,
all right, that's sweet. Biz, I'm going to let you start on this next one in the intro topic. Yeah. MLS calendar switch up. And what does that mean? What does that mean?
So for those that might not be aware, the MLS now has been alluding to the idea that we might be switching to the European calendar.
Wow.
for the last, like, I don't know, it's probably been a little bit of a hushed rumor that's been kind of like being spoken out loud now for, I would say, about a year. And it finally came to a vote with the last ownership meeting. So I kind of want to pose a couple questions to both of you based on just, I think, kind of the landscape of where we're at with this right now, because I think a lot of this ties into the marketing of the actual league itself. But then on top of it too, just, I think, some opportunities that people's eyes, I think, that were MLS fans or MLS backers, myself included, I think really our eyes lit up when Messi was here, because I think it felt like a golden opportunity to kind of strike while the iron's hot with a lot of this stuff of trying to help mold the league into something that is maybe more consumable and in ways that can help maybe expedite the league's progress based on having a player of that magnitude here. So now, the thing that just most recently happened in the owners meeting, though, was that they called it to a vote and felt that logistically they didn't have the parameters drawn up in the correct way, because obviously we've talked about this already too with the calendar discussion of like all the different things that could be affected with it. The cold weather. There's teams up in Canada. Thing, yeah. There's a team in Minnesota. There's teams out on, you know, the Eastern coast that are in, you know, really snowy areas. So you would have to logistically make that work. And what do those expenditures look like? And is the league going to facilitate that money? Because essentially you're penalizing those teams. And, you know, there's going to be nothing really that's required from anybody that's in hot weather. So that's something that needs to be talked about. But there's other things too. I think some owners too are maybe worried about rocking the boat and disrupting a good thing. You also got to talk about like television coverage at the time. Right now, your key months are kind of going, you'd be coinciding against really, I mean, at most, baseball is kind of your biggest thing that you're going up against during the summer months. And if you switch to this European calendar, you're going up head to head on the weekends against college football and the NFL. And that's something too, that being that this sport is knowingly taking a backseat to those things. Does that make a sense? So here's the questions that I'm going to pose to both of you, and just kind of based on your outside looking in thoughts, just with kind of context I provided just now.
Yeah.
First of all, I would say the first question I say is, why was there a vote if this was still in the infancy of planning? Do you guys feel like, Is MLS not taking advantage of this messy inclusion into the league now? Because with this World Cup stretch here about to hit at 2026, if they would have voted yes on this specific this calendar change for the 2026 implementation, that would have been right out of the next World Cup. Like the first week would have been starting like right out of the gate of that next World Cup. And so let me ask you, and Dill, I'll ask you first. So what do you think that's something, regardless of the planning, do you think that's a missed opportunity from the league? Because I've heard a couple different ways of how you look at it. But do you think that's not capitalizing on that World Cup fervor that seems to always hit, you know, around that time?
I don't necessarily think World Cup fervor would translate from... I don't think the World Cup fervor would translate to more eyes on the MLS as much as like that would be the ideal situation. You know, fans in the U.S. get to watch, you know, get to watch the World Cup here. Mm-hmm. The next, you know, the transitionary period of where the transitionary stage of where they're going to put their eyes for more soccer. I don't think for a lot of them is necessarily even going to be the MLS. I think where you're going to see people getting that is maybe some people frequenting their local MLS games a bit more, but I feel like they'd be even more inclined to seek out the European leagues that are so much more popular on TV. Yeah. And you just make a great point that the fact that, like, when I think about it, I don't think any sport is ever going to be, not ever, but who knows what'll happen in the future.
Immediate future.
Yeah. Right? Like, no one's going to beat the NFL and college football. Like, for European audience, anyone here, like, football, the American football here is like a psycho fan base. People are like, it's
very similar to the EPL. If you're talking from an English perspective, it's crazy.
And I think in California, I feel it. We don't feel it as much here because we're spoiled for options in terms of sports. But when you get out to other states where football, American football, seems to be kind of like the sport that everyone rallies around grassroots-wise, very much similarly to, you know, English football in Europe. I just don't think seeing that be beaten. And, like, you know, America's pastime, baseball, can't even beat American football. You know, I feel – so it's like, I don't think – that's necessarily the best play. And I understand the idea of capitalizing, but I just don't think the consumer for soccer would go from World Cup to MLS. I don't think that's where the eyes are going to be. Like, I think there might be some more grassroots fandom, but in the big picture, I don't think that's where it's going to be. I feel like for me, I would be more inclined to seek out that. And that's what I did when I got into soccer in the various ways that I did. The first thing I was into was the U.S. men's national team, but then I found a Premier League team. And it might not make, but because I knew more of those players from just a first glance and just familiarity, because it's so overwhelming. Even now, the MLS is very overwhelming as a fan of the league when you also follow a lot of other American sports. Like, if you don't follow it, like an American sport, I feel like for a year or two, you feel so far behind on like all the players and everything, because it's just so, there's just so many players and there's just so many teams. Whereas in the Premier League, I feel like there's so many big names and there's only 20 teams comparatively to 30 in the MLS. It's just, everything just feels a little bit more familiar, even if you're out of it for a little bit. I don't know. Pix, what do you think?
Yeah, I would say that I do think that it would bring more eyes, and I think it would be an idea that it would bring attention. I think that the biggest thing is, like, people who are going to a soccer game for the first time because they're attending a World Cup game, they're going to be like, wow, I really like this. I want to go out and see more games.
Yeah.
The biggest issue is that while you do get the initial influx, maybe you get, you know, a 5, 10%, even 50% increase in initial fans. If you're switching the calendars over, you're not going to get people going to, you know, a Minnesota in November or, you know, even a game in Massachusetts and Boston in that time when it's snowing and stuff like that. You know, if we switch over to that calendar, December, January, even if we do take that break, there's going to be such a big hit in match attendance where it's like most people, when you're getting into the postseason, the only reason that they're really going to those really cold games is because their teams are actually competing for something.
Yeah.
Most people are like, you know, if given a choice, if it was during a regular season, they'd be like, maybe I just want to watch this at the bar with my friends instead of trekking all the way out to, you know, wherever my stadium is.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a lot of teams. That's a lot of teams that are affected by snow and the weather.
And you have to think one thing too, Pix, I just want to say, it's like the fans who do that for other sports like American football, I feel like they'll sacrifice that, you know, that uncomfortability to get to those 8 or 9 Buffalo Bills games or Minnesota Viking games where it's cold, so cold, because there's such a limited amount of games. Like, that could be the all that you have. Whereas in the, you know, in the MLS, there's so many more games that you can go to where it feels like, oh, maybe I'll get to one. I'm going to go to one that's more ideal for the weather. Exactly. So,
So yeah, just to summarize my point, I think the biggest thing is that while you would get those initial eyes and it would be great for the sport to really be able to use the World Cup as a way to get more people involved, I think the biggest thing is retention. And I think that's the biggest thing that we're seeing with Messi. How do we make people care when Messi isn't on the screen?
You know,
and most of us, like, we're all MLS fans beside Messi. So a lot of us are tired of a lot of the Messi stuff. But I think that the biggest thing is, and what the MLS has to do moving forward, and it still has been struggling even from the Beckham era, of what do we do when Beckham, when Gerrard, when Villa, when Villa, when Messi, you know, and even the big stars, like, Pug, like when he's on the field, what are we meant to do?
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest question that the MLS has that they still haven't been able to answer. And I think that kind of plays into it, where it's just like, you're kind of smacking the fans, the match going fans, in the face by changing the calendar. And like, I don't know, I'm not going to go to a game in December. Like, probably not, unless we're really fighting for something.
I will. Sure. I'll go to a California game in December.
Yeah, lucky you. Now, the one thing I should mention too, of a caveat, is they are speaking about taking like a pause, similar to like what some of the European leagues do during the really like dog days of winter to make it work. And I think that's a non-negotiable at this point. I mean, you would have to, bare minimum, you would have to probably in some capacity figure out how to flush out December, some of January, for like teams like mine, like the team that I'm supporting, where I mean, we hosted a World Cup qualifier here in February as like almost kind of like a a purposeful decision in scheduling to really give yourself a home field advantage. And it was the coldest game in U.S. men's national team history. And you ended up having three players on frostbite watch. Like, it's not for the faint of heart. It's not for, I mean, it's not for outdoor playing. It's not like, that's not a thing that you should be doing at this time of year. And so it's something that you're really going to have to be mindful of. And we're a team that I think has some of the, being that we play outdoors, we have some of the existing, things that will have to be in place in order to make that switch, but not every team's necessarily so lucky too, because of like how we're setting up. And to touch on the point two picks, because I felt like you made some really good points about not wanting to go to some of those games, and think about too, because I can play devil's advocate too on the positives, where during the summer days, right, where maybe we're having these Nations League games, you know, mm-hmm. that all these players are getting called out of, and you're having FIFA friendlies, and you have where the regular season seems a little bit decentivized. I'd be really curious to see what that is going to look like with the actual reversal of the calendar and aligning it, because that's the reason that they are doing this. They're trying to maybe give a little bit more magnitude to some of those regular season games. I think it can still be, you know, questioned on if that's going to actually fully help, because you're still having players like a Messi that are, you know, on match rest, because there are so many different, there's still the battle of fixture congestion that you're dealing with. There's still, you know, their own personal fight with trying to stay match fit for international fixtures if they're getting mm-hmm. called in for those types of things. So you have those battles that you're still kind of undertaking, but this does kind of wait out the middleman when it comes to having to worry about, like, just, I mean, some of those games, you know, during an international break in like July, for instance, like, and you're playing like Minnesota versus, I don't, you know, Austin, and we're both missing like six first team starters. And it's like, you're literally having MLS Next Pro players called in for their first starts. And it's like, no one knows anyone on the team. It's like, what are we doing? Like, yeah, I mean, so it's like, I do have those games as an actual, you know, like as a season ticket holder, where I go to those games and I'm like, this isn't the product if you're trying to recruit. And like, if that's somebody's first MLS game and they, you know, they bought tickets to that, it's like, that's not the product you want to be putting out. So it's I understand why they're trying to figure out how to do this. The other thing too is what we're dealing with today, you know, on top of it too. And we'll touch on this a little bit more about like in depth, but like the transfer deadline day taking place today in April, like we're sitting here by, you know, kind of just out in the middle of nowhere by ourselves here, because it's just the only way we can get it to align. And we're pretty much just kind of picking up scraps on teams that either are in like serious financial trouble, players that are unregistered. Like
you're signing European players that are like, that have like four or five games left in their season. It's an awkward time.
Yeah. It's for players that like just are in a really precarious, goofy position. And it's like, they don't really have any other choice but to come here. It's like, it's kind of where we're at for this time. And that's not all of the MLS transfer windows, obviously, but like for
that is for a Red Bull. Yeah.
For some teams it is. I agree with you. But it is one of those things with how it's set up where that would all of a sudden align now too. And I think like we just saw it with some of the best signings that we brought in, like an Emmanuel Latte Loth, where you ended up having to pay a premium if you're Atlanta United for Middlesbrough, where a player that's probably, you know, somewhere in like the lower maybe in the teens, you ended up having to pay $20 million for the guy because they weren't motivated to sell him because they still had some transfer window time in January, you know, left, where they weren't exactly like, there was no leverage there. You have no leverage in these situations if you don't have up until the end of the deadline to work, where a team starts to get a little bit more desperate and they don't have other offers to leverage you against. So it's like, there are things that you have to work and figure out why, and I understand logistically why they're trying to figure out how to do it, but at the same time, there's so many things going against you with the geography of the country itself that I don't know how feasible it is. And I understand why they're taking their time to do it, but it also irks me as an MLS fan, because they've been talking about doing this for a while, and with some of the expansion and some of the things that they could have been pragmatic on how they think about and proactive of how they think about with like implementing this, when you're telling a team like a Minnesota United years ago, saying like, hey, we have aspirations in the next 10 to 15 years to try to move to the European calendar. Why don't you think about that when you're building your stadium? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, those are the types of things where it's like, you know, I know some of this stuff is just kind of like, you have to fly by the seat of your pants because the league is growing and accelerating at maybe a speed that even like the commissioner and some of the higher ups in ownership weren't exactly expecting, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be thinking about these things way out and having a plan in a landscape. And I do feel like MLS has done that to maybe some people will disagree with me, but I do think the roster rules that are in place have done a really good job of, I think, championing the league to have sustainability and just kind of building a solid foundation. But we are rapidly approaching a time where, like, we're probably going to put some of these roster rules in the mirror. We're going to have to start having these conversations more consistently. So, I just think right now with where we're at with it, the calendar discussion is an interesting discussion because I really can't, like, I'm really sitting just like right on the fence of, like, I don't really know how I even personally feel about it.
Yeah.
Being somebody that's out in Minnesota, like I there's a lot of holes I could poke in it. I know I brought it up to my brother and he was like beyond like just bewildered that they were even thinking about doing it just based on, you know, a lot of the negatives that I brought up going up against. Try to explain to somebody that, you know, maybe wants to get into the league and, you know, could go see a game in July and actually has the free time to do it because nothing that they, you know, other sports that maybe are their first priority they like. But then you bring it into where all of a sudden these games are in November and you have a game on Sunday going head to head against a Vikings game here locally. It's going to lose 100 times out of 100. It just is for a casual fan. Yeah. It's saying something different if it's like someone like me where, you know, I would try to maybe figure out a way to watch both in some capacity. But there is that reality that MLS really needs to, like, maybe have that honest conversation with itself that we're still not there yet. So It's like, you need to also really be thoughtful on how you lay this out, because if you're not careful, you really can squash the momentum that you have by doing this too quickly or not thinking about it logically. So yeah, I just think across the board, it is a really interesting conversation to have.
All right. Well, we will see what happens with it. Yeah. For me, I don't think it's likely in the near future, but who really knows? It is an interesting caveat, you know, that it could have momentum after the World Cup, but I just don't think that's a strong enough argument to make for that type of change right now. But let us talk about the schedule that we do have right now. Let's get into the main topic of the show, MLS Weeks 8 and 9.
The main topic is what you came for!
Ow! Right, guys, MLS Weeks 8 and 9. We spoke about it a little at the top in regards to how our teams are doing, but we are recording this on transfer deadline night, getting close to the last bits of signings. Obviously, there's some, you know, caveats to when teams can make some other signings as well. But Biz, there's a topic that we wanted to talk a little bit at the top, and I'm going to let you kind of start with that one.
Yeah. So I just wanted to be sure to mention for anybody that does follow MLS and might know the name if you're a fan of world football. So unfortunately, we have to bring up the name Aaron Boapenza, not for the person himself, but just based on the circumstance. And Boapenza was a designated player that played for FC Cincinnati as early as I think, or as most recent, I should say, as last year. Mm-hmm. 35 games, 9 goals. Was there for about a season and a half, but he very suddenly passed away in China. They're still kind of investigating what the cause was of it. It was actually like kind of we won't get too much into the details, but it was actually falling from like his apartment. So like a really, really sad and tragic and sudden way for him to go. It sounded like he just didn't show up to training. He's currently playing in the Chinese league with Zhejiang Professional, I think is the name, how you would pronounce the team.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just really wanted to just bring that name up and just kind of, you know, as an American soccer podcast, anytime you're in the MLS brotherhood, anytime that you, you know, you don a MLS jersey. So we definitely, definitely just wanted to say rest in peace to Aaron Boapenza. Mm-hmm. He is teammates. I actually saw the cool thing that I saw over the weekend was Denny Bouanga paying tribute post goal for the late equalizer. He was teammates with him on the Gabon international team. So they played together closely. So I thought that was a really nice touch by him with the rest in peace written under the shirt. So yeah, thinking about that is honestly just terrible news. But wanted to be sure that was brought up because anybody that follows the league even loosely probably knew the name because that was actually kind of a big deal when he came into the league. So
yeah, well said, Biz, and rest in peace to Aaron Boapenza. In regards to what we have going on kind of in the now, like I mentioned before, the MLS transfer deadline day, that's something that we wanted to speak about a little bit in terms of just some rumors, a couple moves that have been made. And I'm going to kick it off with one that I thought was pretty interesting. It's not on our list here, but it's pretty, it kind of coincides with another inner Miami move, but Miami trades Robert Taylor to Austin FC, yeah. And me and Pix were talking about it a little bit earlier, just a really solid squad player that inner Miami are losing, and it just makes me a little bit curious, you know, what the thought process for inner Miami is right now. Where is this? Are they getting rid of a few pieces because they did, you know, do they trade away Gressel, or what kind of move was that?
It is a trade. He hadn't really been playing either. I don't know. Like, I don't even really know if he was necessarily,
I don't think he was playing in the reserves either the MLS or reserves.
Yeah. I don't know how like the MLS registration works with that too. And if he even was, but I know he was like, he has like not made an appearance and was like completely out of their plan. So that's been on the horizon for a while, from the sounds of it. And yeah, that is officially over the line too. That was to Minnesota.
Exciting. United, so we're very, how do you feel about that one?
Pixel messaged me in the group chat about it a while ago. And I like, honestly, me and my brother have brought up his name a couple times because now with the sudden change, we've been a little confused on how Longwani has been deployed, at the right wing back spot. I've noticed watching live that they're actually like having him tuck into the midfield in possession, which for a guy that is just like such a straight line runner, straight line speed, like wing, like, guy, it just made no sense because that is just not his strong suit. I don't feel like he's good in tight, like in those tight spaces when it comes to like actual, like the technical proficiency. He's very much like just take a guy out one-on-one in the, you know, in the space and then just try to, you know, kind of knock the ball past him.
Yeah.
So I was a little confused, and don't really have that like guy that can maybe tuck in and is comfortable in doing that. We have kind of an out and out fullback in DJ Taylor that was a USL guy that's made the squad, that's been there for a while. So we really did not have that. And that was like the one roster omission over this past offseason that I was a little surprised that we didn't do anything with. So it feels like the right move. And Gressel, he can play in both spots. He can play at wing back. He can play in the midfield. So a person that tucks in and maybe, you know, adds numbers in possession when you have the ball. Makes a lot of sense to me. I feel like it fits. And from what I read too, I saw our beat reporter, because I have Twitter pulled up too, just kind of seeing if Bogert tweets anything else. But our beat reporter actually said that Ramsey said on top of it too, that they really want to get him back and deployed in the attacking fold, which nice. I think is really, my brother and me have both been saying that my brother specifically kind of had the, I'll give him credit. I know he'll be listening and probably give me shit. he's been just clamoring for him to get striker touches and stuff too, just because he is such a just straight line, like speedy, just kind of challenging player to take on whenever he is on the right wing. So it'll be interesting too when you can spell Tanny or Yeboah and just bring that on late too, and then still use him in the wing back spot, because I actually think he did get okay and proficient at it, but I just am still in the camp with, if you're going to play that way, it doesn't make sense. So Gressel, I think, is definitely an upgrade with that and makes a lot of sense. So I'm really excited about that. I think that's a really fun move, and Gressel's a proven winner in this league. So definitely fits, I think, the aspirations we have with the signing. So, yeah.
Well, a team that isn't excited, Pix put this one in earlier, FC Cincinnati denied by Thomas Mueller. How do you what are you thinking about that, Pix? Was that ever realistic? You know, Thomas Mueller coming to the MLS, a team like Cincinnati. Does he want the bright lights of LA Galaxy? Chili.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the reason that I put it out there is just the idea of having Thomas Mueller at a team like Cincinnati.
Right, it's so weird.
It'd be so great. I was reading a little bit about it, and apparently, like, they have one of the highest concentrations of like German Americans too. And they have like one of the largest Oktoberfests.
Wow.
So I think Thomas would feel, yeah, exactly, right at home. He's got the beer. I think his wife is like a famous equestrian. Hopefully, they got some stables over there in Cincinnati. Okay. Yeah. But obviously the stables were not good enough to bring Thomas Mueller over. I'm still curious about where he's going. There's been some talk about maybe Fiorentina. I think overall, this is like all of the discussions that we have, it's all going to depend on where he ends up going. But I think FC Cincinnati would have been just such an interesting place for him. And I think
it would have, yeah.
Like, I don't know. I think it, like, obviously everyone talks about, you know, the NYCs, the LAs, but I think FC Cincinnati, Thomas Mueller, I think that would have been a great partnership.
Can I add something to that too that I read that I thought was super interesting? Of course. So since he approached him and they were trying to get it in a similar deal of how the Galaxy signed Marco Royce and were trying to get it as a non-DP deal too, which I thought was really ambitious and I loved it because I think like bringing in Mueller as like a designated player at this point of his career, especially with like the aspirations since he has right now, I think is just like, it just seems more like a market, like a marketability move than anything. Like not to say that he can't do it. I think Mueller's such a, like just a savvy player in his bones that like, I think that dude could like, if he wants to play until he's 40, if he wants, like, you know what I mean? But when it comes down to it though, I think like just how you're constructing your roster, having a player like that though, where it's not, you know, in a league, we've said it with Giroud, where it's like, it's a league that is built on just having a player that is quick, pacey, can start those attacks and those counters. And it's like, you're seeing how much Giroud is really struggling. So I think like Mueller on a deal like that, even if he is just maybe taking a little bit more of the, like the playmaking, you know, responsibilities out of it, would be interesting. But dude, with how since he's playing right now, I can't even fathom if they would have gotten that over the line with a Vander, Kevin Danke, and Thomas. Dude, that team would have been awesome. Like, I'm actually a little bummed that it didn't work.
The biggest thing though is that he would have been so good for that team, just like you're saying, because he wouldn't have had to have the playmaking and having to be the center. Because I think that one of the big issues is that we see Forsberg, where it's like a lot of the times we want Forsberg to be playing in the 10 and we want him to play the 9 as well. And it's like with Thomas, the thing about him, Thomas Mueller, is that that he like needs to have a lot of pieces that work around him that can also do the thing. Because his whole thing is about interpreting space. And it's like, if the people around you don't know how to be in the space that you need it to, then it's not going to work at all. But I think that FC Cincinnati with, you know, the Dankies, the Evanders, I think that Thomas Mueller would be able to help basically be like a player coach in a sense and really be able to mold the team in a sense that I think wouldn't be able to work in a lot of the teams. Like I don't think that would be able to work in a Galaxy right now with their project of having Puge be one of the, you know, the centerpieces. I don't think it would work too well at LAFC either right now. But I think FC Cincinnati would have been a great landing spot. Obviously super ambitious. And obviously we're all, you know, we're wearing our MLS fan bias caps on right now. But, you know, I think it would have been awesome for the league.
I agree.
No, it all depends on where he ends up. I hope he fails wherever he ends up so that he would desire of what if I went to Cincinnati.
Sitting up at night, man, like, man, I wish I was in Cincinnati, Ohio right now. I think we've all thought that at some point in our life.
I don't know. I don't think many people have thought that, actually. But no shade on Cincinnati. Second place on the table. All right. Another one that I wanted to bring up. LAFC making a couple moves. Ryan Raposo, the Canadian free agent. That I was peeking around, and I ended up on Vancouver Whitecaps Reddit. Apparently, he was going to, you know, the depths of Reddit. He was apparently going to sign with a Chinese Super League second division team, and then that fell through. And now he finds himself at LAFC. It was just funny. I was through the comments. Some guy was going through, well, with the current political situation, it's probably best that he lives in the U.S. over China. And I'm like, that's what we're talking about right now in this thread.
See, I'm just like group meeting on air right now. Like, I'm telling you, we need to incorporate more Reddit comments into our. There is some gold mines in the MLS depths of Reddit, man. I'm telling you, they're like team specific. There is some funny stuff. Yeah. But anyway, no, continue.
And then they also signed Frankie Amaya from what team was he on?
Mexican League.
Yes. Is it alone? Is,
like top of the table.
Yes, alone is what I remember saying. Yeah, 24-year-old former U.S. youth international, and that's actually another. I was telling Pix a little bit earlier. There's another. Yeah, Santiago Munoz also joined from Sporting Kansas City from Liga MX as well. So a couple of Liga MX players coming in. Does this move the needle for LAFC? Raposo, I think, he's a solid player, a solid squad player, I think. I don't think it's going to be too crazy of a move, but I don't know too much about Frankie Amaya. Do either one of you have any insight into him?
Yeah, Pix does.
Oh, yeah. He played a long time at the Red Bull, so I know him pretty well. But the big thing about him is that I think that I really regret the fact that the Red Bulls didn't go after him. We don't really need center midfielders right now as much as we need at every other spot. But just the fact that we didn't even make a bid or anything like that when he's going over on a loan, I think that would have been great. I think that he's good enough to be competing for the starting spot in a lot of MLS teams. I think that the center midfield spot has been kind of evolving over time, where a lot of teams are wanting to have DPs. But when it comes to having a non-DP player at that caliber, I think, you know, you can't really go wrong with Frankie Amaya. So I think the fact that LAFC are really becoming so stacked in that midfield really helps it out. And they're even to the point where, you know, they're taking players from, you know, they took away from the Galaxy, and they're even taking away the opportunity from other teams of signing those players and stacking them up.
Let me read. Let me read what their midfield looks like right now with those additions. So they've been running a 4-3-3 pretty consistently. So you got Timothy Tillman, Marky Delgado. The other player, Igor Jesus, that I think is new this year, that is Brazilian. I think he was. I could be wrong. I feel like he was one of their under-23s. But yeah. So those three specifically have been the starters. Then you're also bringing in now, you're bringing in Ryan Raposo and Frankie Amaya as players that are rotational, which I think is insane when it actually comes down to it. And then you still have that Odin Thiago Holm as well. Good. Like
Loney from Celtic.
You have legitimately like three solid backups that, like, if they're playing in a day, like, I don't think anyone's going to bat an eye. So, like, I think both those moves, I think that's really telling to how LAFC is planning, like, in the long run of roster build. I just think, like, you have to have depth in this league with how long and arduous the season is through the summer months, because we are, like, with our calendar, we are one of the few that are playing in, you know, the dog days of summer through June, July, and August, where, you know, you're playing in hot days and you're playing, you know, it's long. Those longer trips suck a little bit more when you're, you know, in 90 degree weather and have to go to Austin in July. Like, it's just like the injuries start to stop, like, just pile up. So having midfield options where you can really heavily rotate and deal with that, because we're also going to be, I mean, we're going to have the League's Cup here coming up too during the summer. It's like, so you're going to have all of these players, like, accessible, and some teams are better than others. And I think LAFC right now, for me, from like a depth standpoint, looking at how they're sitting, they are in such a good spot. Like, I think they're sitting on 13 points and, like, kind of just like in the lower playoff positions right now. That team is going to shoot back up. I trust the process of, like, what they're doing. And they were also dealing with the Champions League stuff. So I still hold firm. I had them, I think, if when we were talking about, like, early predictions for where, I still think that they could win supporters, even with how good Vancouver's been. I really do. I think that team is so built.
Yeah.
All right. And the last one that I wanted to bring up, which was funny, I didn't even notice these two moves, especially the first one. Bruce Arena continues to bring in former players from the Revolution.
Yeah, full 11 of his former team.
It's so weird. Like, Noel Buck and DeJuan Jones. Noel Buck, I'm surprised by. He's only made two appearances for the Revolution this year.
Yeah.
He's a really highly touted prospect for them. He was the player who was on loan at Southampton for half a season. Mm-hmm. They were kind of trialing him to see maybe if he could make the move over to England playing for their U21s. Yep. But yeah, I don't know. Picks, how does this strike you? I feel like this is so video gamey, like, this style of, it's like, I don't understand why San Jose would even want him to do this. Like, there's a reason it didn't work out over there.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that San Jose is just giving him all the reins, and I think that's a good thing for a team like San Jose, where they haven't had anything to reign over, you know, they haven't had much to do. So I think that giving Bruce Arena the control, and we saw the same thing, where it's just like, if you give someone too much control for too long, which we saw with Peter Vermes, it becomes stale, it becomes a dry out. But the fact that Bruce Arena is able to do that now, and, you know, maybe it doesn't work in 5 years, but having all of them follow his style, and especially with a guy like that who, you know, his players, it's in the same way like Mourinho's men, where they'll run through brick walls. I think that that's the same thing that Bruce Arena kind of cultivates in his dressing room. Mm-hmm. And I think that those players will run through a brick wall for you are sometimes even better than the more technical players. Because we've seen a lot of technical players join the league and not be able to do anything because there's not the motivation. Mm-hmm. You know, what does it matter if, you know, the top eight, you know, the eight teams are going to the playoff anyway? Why do I have to perform today? Mm-hmm. And I think that Bruce Arena really getting everybody on board now and saying, hey, guys, you know, I am someone who, like, you know, really want to make a name for myself and really carve something out that, you know, sets me aside from all the legacy that I've had.
Sure.
Let's carve something out together. And I think that's something powerful to build, especially in the MLS, where you don't need those technical players. You can make players with more heart. We always talk about players who have the dog in them, like Diego Luna. And, like, this is what, you know, Bruce Arena is making. So I'm really excited to see the project. I'm excited to see kind of how it builds. And not to say that these players aren't technical. I just think that, you know, these players are more heart than they are technical, in a sense, in a lot of ways. So I'm excited to see it. What about
you? Gotta get the culture right, right? Like, exactly. I think that's the biggest thing. And that, I think that's what I see from a lot of these moves. I think the biggest thing, actually, I can't remember who specifically they have. They had a former Bruce Arena player on one of the Apple TV when I had MLS 360 on like 2 weeks ago. And they had brought up Arena when they were just discussing a couple things. I don't remember the context of why he was brought up, but regardless, they had just kind of mentioned like, how do you think he's going to do with San Jose? You know, yada, yada, yada. And that was the biggest thing that he said. It was, just everything that Bruce does. Oh, I know it was Mike McGee. That's who it was. So former player that played with him, probably like amongst one of the first couple tenured spots and is considered a pretty, you know, like a kind of an MLS like mainstay when it comes to names and maybe like early OG Rushmore for MLS stuff. Mm-hmm. And so McGee really had a lot of high praise saying that like Bruce is going to, you know, come in, bring in the right pieces that he trusts. And he's also going to ensure that the locker room is like the foundation. So it's like, he's going to have people that he knows that he can, like, he doesn't have to micromanage, trust like their work rate, their efforts, all that stuff. Cause that's the first thing that you really do. I feel like have to, like, if you're starting a new culture, that is the thing. You can't have players that like you're constantly looking over their shoulder, making sure that they're working and doing, you know, following what you want them to do. Cause that stuff just spreads like cancer where it you have one bad apple. It just like, everyone's like, why is he not being held to the same standard that I am? Like, why, you know what I mean? And so you really do have to flush that out. I think Arena has really championed that. And I mean, he's proven success. It's everywhere he's gone. He's the most successful MLS manager from a trophies and a win standpoint in league history. So it's like he has a proven template that does work. So I get it. I do think that bringing up to like I wanted to as well, just because it is just like it feels a little bit like a meme because it is just like, I mean, we're no joke. Like, I know we said like a full 11. I mean, there's got to be 7 or 8 former first teamers in this team now, like legitimately. And it's a couple like, you know, bigger name MLS players that I'm sure he's like wanted to work with. Like, that's kind of where we're at right now. So it is a very interesting roster build. They've struggled as of late too. So I'm not surprised to see them making some moves to try to bolster the team. But I still think San Jose will like be competing at the end of the year for a playoff spot. I think it's going to be on the tail end of it still, because I still think their roster is not like perfect by any means, but, and they're relying on some older pieces, but yeah, I still think they'll be there.
Yeah. I'm looking here and I think this bit of the article says they've signed several former Revs players. Several is usually around 7, including center back.
Has taught us anything, right?
Yeah. Including center back, Dave Romney, midfielder, Ian Harkes, fullback, Dojuan Jones. Meanwhile, Matt Polster and Al Hassan Youssef have emerged.
Yep.
I don't know if those
a lot guys of New England Revs guys that he was just most recently at, but
yeah, interesting. Yeah. Very, very interesting. But I think those are most of like kind of the main ones that we wanted to touch on transfer deadline day.
I can give like a couple new ones that just like recently dropped, and we don't have to go like deep into them, but just like Zandy Silva to St. Louis City from Atlanta United was one that just dropped. The Gressel one we went over. Hold on, I'm gonna pull up Bogert specifically just
because. Zandy Silva is one I'm really a big fan of, and we were just talking about how Atlanta have been a little bit disappointing attacking wise before we started the podcast, but that's a player that I've always been really, I think that he fits the MLS level pretty well. So the fact that Atlanta are willing to get rid of him, I was pretty surprised by.
I thought the same. And then Columbus Crew making a move, Ibrahim Aliyu from Houston Dynamo, who is only 23. That's a really interesting move. So that was a move, probably the most recent move I think actually that Bogert tweeted. So other than that, I think we're hitting just about all the other pieces, because the one other piece that we're omitting, we're going to come back to later with the saga that is the shit pile of a club that is Boa Vista.
Did you see? Well, another interesting one is Houston Dynamo bringing in a guy from St. Johnstone, a striker. What's his name? Toyasi, Olasanya. And the reason I bring that up is because we kind of did that random deep dive in the Houston Dynamo transfers. And that player that hadn't played for like 6 months had that crazy off the bench late game tying goal. So like it 90th just came, minute yeah, equalizer, it came full I know, circle.
Made us all eat our words.
I was I like, wow. It. Well, he came down in the 90th minute. He's still getting used to the, he hasn't played in a little while. So he's good in spurts. But one last one. My boy, Jaquiel Marshall-Ruddy goes on loan to Charlotte. Oh, yeah. So like
that was earlier today. Actually. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Top one, of the table, Charlotte loaning in a young guy like him. I mean, that's expectation to play. Yeah. I would assume because I'm surprised he hasn't been really playing too much at Montreal. It's disappointing because I feel like that's the team for them to just try out a bunch of young guys and let them just. I mean, you just play a bunch of young guys and let them develop, and you don't really care how poor you are because it's such a transitionary period for the team. But it's weird to let him. I don't know. It's better for. It's good for him, but I don't know for Montreal.
Learn under Reem too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. Well, those are most of the transfers, like we mentioned. But we are going to do, before we kind of get into a few things that kind of transcend players, we're going to talk in a little bit about some ownership stuff as well as some LAFC coaching news at the end of the season. Biz kind of put it out there that maybe we should all pick a team, whether we're buying on the stock, we're selling the stock on them. And you know what? Me and Pix thought that was a good idea. We allowed him to have this topic for himself.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks
you're
for
welcome.
Letting me contribute.
And the team that I want to bring up, don't you hate it when you're on the spot and you're trying to remember it? The Seattle, no, was it Seattle Sound? No, Pix, you go first. Now I'm confused.
Oh,
I feel like I had it and now I don't have it.
Now I'm on the spot. All right. We already touched a little bit on this team, but I think we're going to be getting a little bit deeper into, you know, what their future looks like. But LAFC, we talked a little bit about their moves.
What?
They brought in some depth. I think Biz was kind of on the spot of buying them. I think one of the biggest question marks right now is that striker situation. But I think that they have so much depth and so much progression moving forward that they'll be able to pick up the points that they need. You know, they're going to lose some matches. They're going to draw a couple games. But they're going to have enough that they're going to be able to really do well once they get that striker and have all those pieces already fitting in, especially with the big news that Steve Cherundolo is out now. So this is his last season as manager of the team. The big news was that he wants to just, you know, amicably return back to Germany with his home family. Yep. It kind of looks like, and this is at the end of the season, so announced pretty early. But one of the big things with that is that, you know, it's pretty amicable. He's probably going to get, you know, a job somewhere in soccer moving forward in Germany or something like that. With all his
support. Hanover probably, but, right? He was there for, I mean, he was there forever.
I think as well.
Yeah.
So it's a team I'm really excited about, especially with all the players really, you know, uniting around Cherundolo and uniting around the team. You know, this is a manager who's been able to get to the MLS final so many times and has been able to
three trophies and exactly. In charge. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So he's been able to do so much, and I think that he's going to continue to do that, especially, you know, as his last season. I think a lot of those players are going to move forward and hopefully go it over the line. But the biggest question mark with them, and kind of one of the reasons that I wanted to highlight them, is that there's still a huge question mark around the striker position. Ever since Arango left, there really hasn't been, you know, a really, really good out and out striker who's been able to really be able to lead the line like that. So, you know, I think all of it depends. I'm buying the stock with the condition that they get a striker. It doesn't matter who. I just need a backup to Giroud that can do a little bit more. Obviously, it doesn't really fit the play style, but I'm really excited to see what LAFC are going to be able to do. What about you, Biz? What's your team?
Yeah, I would say for me, I was going to say too, I would definitely, I think you're nail on the head with
LAFC. Buying with me.
Yeah. I'm definitely buying with
bullish.
You. I think that team's a top four squad.
Are you just going to say that right in front of me?
You put me on the spot. So I had I had two options. I was like, if Biz puts me on the spot, I'm going to say this team. And if
Joe puts me on the spot, I pick NYCFC.
Well, mine is kind of an interesting one. So I decided that I think taking a little bit of a deeper look at St. Louis City and buying or selling their stock, because I think going into the season, they were a really trendy team that was like predicted to go like maybe sneak into top four with like having a lot of the pieces and like new management and what they've obviously everyone's, I think, just like really using like what they did in their first season. Under Carnell and like how just insane that achievement was in your first expansion season to win the West and get Champions League football like right out of the gate. That is just like so unheard of. So since then it has not been fun times in the league for St. Louis City, and now they're sitting on at least over their last five, they're looking at four losses and a draw in their most recent game. Goals have been incredibly hard to come by. Looking at their last five, Philadelphia Union 5 games ago, 1-0, they didn't score. Austin FC 1-0 loss, they didn't score. We watched that game. Kansas City versus St. Louis City, KC in a rivalry game, probably one of the more recent heavier, stronger rivalries. 2-0 loss, didn't score. 2-1 loss to the Crew, finally did score. 0-0 draw against Vancouver most recently, didn't score. So it's a team that is really struggling to score goals. They brought in a new manager too that was, I don't want to say unproven, but brought in with maybe a little bit of a lack of experience. He had really not had any proven track record through the Swedish leagues that he had been in, where he was maybe just kind of had some, a little bit more mundane results in comparison to others. Olaf Melberg, he had been at Copenhagen as a player, but then also management had kind of taken him throughout, a couple different spots in Sweden specifically. But Bromopoj Karna, I think, is the team that he had been to a couple different times, and they were just like really just like a mid-table Swedish side. So I think a lot of people were kind of like optimistic about like just him coming in as like a former player, and they just really have not, they have not found anything and not really hit their stride. And I don't know, what is your guys's, we've watched them once, like feel free to jump in, but what is your guys's outward perception of St. Louis? Do you guys feel like, my biggest thing is I just don't feel like they have any notable players that make me excited to watch them. I think is like my biggest thing and why I kind of wanted to focus on them. And I think it's understandable that like in an attacking league, these zeros are consistent, but what about you guys? Do you feel the same way?
I will kind of connect it to the team that I'm picking, because I feel like they're so similar in the output of what they're giving, and it's a team that I'm selling. I'm selling. You sell high right now, because this is going to be the highest they're going to be. Austin FC sitting on 7 goals scored, 8 goals conceded, and this isn't just not me slandering their psycho-looking keeper, Stuver, who we've watched live. That guy
Dill was scarred watching that game.
They've only allowed 8 goals this season, which is very, very impressive. But 5 of those goals came against Vancouver Whitecaps, where Brian White had a 9.9 match rating. He scored 4 in that game, right? 3 or 4, Biz?
Yeah.
Four piece. What do you even call that?
He almost got 5 because they had a penalty. And he was like, no, I'll just give it to my buddy instead.
That's a real one right there.
Yeah.
But the reason I'm selling and the reason I'm kind of relating it to it is because if you look at St. Louis City, they felt like the team for me, especially when we did the watch party early on, and they got the better of the LA Galaxy. It's like, oh, this could be that team that's like so defensive and they just play so, so low block and just not allow anything to happen that they maybe can sneak some wins. And it's like, that's what Austin FC are doing. And I just don't think that is super sustainable in this league. Like you see St. Louis City, but the thing is too, it's like, if I compare it to some of the other teams in the Eastern Conference who are kind of playing a similar way, like New England Revolution, 6 goals, 7 conceded, they're sitting on 10 points. That's only a 6-point difference for Austin FC. So it's like, we're still so early stages, but all the other teams surrounding them, the output of goals is so much more. Vancouver, 17, Minnesota, even them, 4 more than them at 11, Portland, 16, Colorado, 13. It's like, you need to be scoring in this league. It's very hard to stay up while just being a super defensive team, just because the output is just so crazy. So I don't know. I'm not surprised St. Louis City is struggling this much, because, they kind of barely, it felt like it was such a close game against an injured Galaxy side. I'm not surprised by that. Picks, what do you think about St. Louis? I know, you're a big Berkey guy.
Yeah, I'm a big Berkey guy, but like Biz said, I don't think Berkey's enough. I think, you know, Berkey and Klaus can only carry so much.
It's a problem when Berkey's your biggest name.
Exactly.
I think that's really problematic.
Yeah, and I think even Berkey isn't, you know, a terribly big name either. I think he's a great goalkeeper, but I think that, you know, he's not one of those huge names that you hear of. But one of the things that I think unites both Austin and St. Louis is the fact that they just both signed two attacking players, because we were just talking about the lack of goals. So we have St. Louis City with Shondy Silva that we mentioned.
I love that signing for St. Louis too. I think that's really smart. They need to get, I think that's the thing. They need to get a little bit quicker. I think that they just need somebody that can maybe stretch the field a little bit too. Exactly. They need to find something that is just going to create some space for them. And the thing that they have going for them, I think, you know, the devil's advocate argument you could make with both the teams that we brought up, Dill, is the fact that it's pretty rare to see, you know, the goal scoring output that maybe on the offensive side, but it's also rare to see the defensive side too, with how good those teams have been defensively. I mean, St. Louis only giving up 6 goals in totality this year. That's saying something, man. That's really good. And Austin, you know, only giving up a couple more, and 5 of those goals came against Vancouver. So, I mean, if you take that game completely away with how much that got away from them, it's like they've only given up like 3 total goals this year, like outside of those other games. So it's like they're both pitching really good defensive rates right now, which it's like if you can even just like, you know, up your offensive output by like, you know, 20%, 50%, it's like the amount of points that you're going to start pulling down is going to move quickly. And it's why I think right now with some of the moves and with a summer transfer window still out there, I'm definitely in the camp where I would probably kind of take a wait and see approach with St. Louis. But if they're able to keep the defensive strategy, I would probably be more inclined to buy than I would be to sell, because it feels like Berkey's maybe a little bit back to what he was in his like in their top end year where he like stole some points for them. And I feel like defensively they've been really obviously really solid too collectively. So it's like they just have to figure out how to manufacture, even if it's be that team that scores on set pieces or something. Like find your thing and find a way to, like, even if you're grinding out 1-0 wins, it's like all you got to do is, I mean, if you're gonna pitch shutouts consistently or only allow 1 goal a game, it's like on average it's, you don't have to do much. You just have to figure out a way to manufacture more than what you're doing right now. Because 5 goals, we're in match day 9 now. It's like going on 10. You can't be doing that in the MLS. I mean, on average, I think it's a little over 2 goals a game is the average goal. You're going to get worked in every game you play. It's how the league is formatted. So
the big thing is, I wonder if, you know, the guy who we just talked about earlier, Robert Taylor, is going to be able to provide Austin, you know, that additional, that 10, 20% that you're talking about, Biz, in both for St. Louis with Silva and then with Austin FC getting Robert Taylor, which are both, I think Robert Taylor more so has been able to prove himself in the MLS.
Yeah, I like Robert Taylor.
So I think that having and giving Austin FC that, I think, provides a lot more. So I'm really excited to see how these guys are able to do and if we're, you know, right on these predictions too.
I remember like Taylor kind of had like this, like almost like higher end hype train for him, like out of the gates. Cause he had just like, it felt like when Messi first came into the team for Inter Miami, I remember like kind of, you know, that aura that was there, like all these players. And he had a couple different, obviously his own personal players that were there with him, like a Busquets and Alba, where like they've played with him. So it's like, that's not anything that they haven't seen where it's like they're overwhelmed by the moment. But you could tell watching those early games with Messi where a lot of the teammates were like genuinely like in awe and like really like worried about making mistakes. The one person that was like getting hyped up was Robert Taylor, was just not afraid of the moment. I think he was the one benefiting the most, where people are saying like, who is this guy? This guy's crazy. Like for anybody that was a casual fan that wasn't paying attention. So I think a lot of people, his name kind of got associated with that. Now he's kind of just been dropped for other players that they brought in, obviously over time, that like, you know, they're trying to get better, higher profile signings, stuff like that. But I still think he can do a job in the MLS because the guy has proven that he's kind of, I feel like he's got a little bit of dog mentality in him where he feels like he has that game. So I really like that signing for Austin too. I think that's like some juice from the bench. It's a guy that can fill in, you know, anytime like Osman Bukhari or one of your other, like if Ozuni needs to take a game off or only can, you know, run for 45 during League's Cup stretches. It's like Robert Taylor is such a good, like extra piece to have where you can just like throw him in for 30 minute spells, throw him in a spot start. He's going to probably not be a huge drop off. And we were just talking about it with LAFC with their midfield. It's like the more depth options that are quality that you can find in the MLS, the better. So I both moves for both those teams, I think are really solid upgrades.
Yeah. And I think we can all agree. I'm a big fan of that exact MLS quality player where it's just like, you can give me any DP. I think they're all, you know, they're all fun. They all bring their own qualities. But bringing in a player that any team can get no matter the situation and have them work, I think that's what you know all of us dream about, of having those really good utility players.
Mm-hmm.
A little Swiss Army knife action.
Exactly. I'm so jealous of your Finnish player too.
Yeah, Robin Lud is the dog. That is the game.
Do everything. We need some of that in the Red Bulls, and I'm sure Galaxy could use him as well.
You got me missing Mark Delgado right now. All right. Well, that's who we're buying. Well, two of you guys are buying. I'm selling. So now you got me questioning it. Now you guys were so convincing that I should hold on. But one last thing before we want to move into the grab bag section is RSL under new ownership, the Miller family, and I assume that means they also own the Utah Jazz.
Yep. Yep.
Will they be able to handle a player like Diego Luna in their ownership group? That is the question we're asking. No, Biz, what do you got on this?
Yeah, so Miller family taking it over, I felt it was important to highlight because the RSL ownership has kind of taken some twists and turns over the course of, honestly, their whole tenure within this is their fourth ownership group in the club's history already. Yeah, and they've been in the league for, I think, 15, 20 years. So that's really saying something. But yeah, the Miller family officially purchased the team for $600 million. They purchased both RSL and I think it was also interesting to note as well that they purchased the Utah Royals. Okay. So the NWSL squad. That is going to be associated with that. And then they also, the deal itself includes all the RSL affiliated properties. So they're buying the stadium, buying the training center, buying RSL's academy. So they're going to be like really injecting where all of that stuff is coming in that deal, which isn't necessarily always the case. Sometimes there's like minority stakes where they'll keep some of those things. Or if it was like in the stadium case, sometimes it'll be like personally purchased, so you have to kind of deal with that as like a logistical thing. But all of that stuff was thrown in with the deal, so this is just outright like they own the club now. It's completely under their control. Yeah, and then to give a little bit more context, so this is the second time the club's ownership's changed hands since 2020. So the Miller family, like I said, becomes the fourth ownership team to have the club since it was launched in 2004. In RSL's inauguration into the league. Dave Checkitz was the first owner, had it for 9 years. And then he ended up selling it to Delroy Hansen. Hansen had it for 8 years, and Hansen had some pretty serious controversy with that was honestly, I think kind of, if I remember right, it was right around the same time as like Donald Sterling with the Clippers. Cause that was like almost like bang bang where it was like, what is happening in like ownership groups where there was like, just like really blatant and serious racism, like taking place the place with it. So yeah. So he ended up being forced to sell and he sold it to the current owners, the Blitzers. The Blitzers investment portfolio is actually pretty vast. They have ownership stake in Crystal Palace, which I actually didn't know until I looked it up. But Crystal Palace of the England's top tier, FC Augsburg in the German Bundesliga, the New Jersey Devils, and then the Philadelphia 76ers. So they're involved with all of those teams. They are officially, from my understanding, staying on and being involved as like a minority owner. So they still have like a minority stake in it, but the majority belongs to the Miller family now, including like the full operation of the squad. So that is official. It's over the line. And whenever you have something like that, especially when it's local, I think RSL fans kind of like breathe a sigh of relief too. I don't know if there was ever any like worry about it potentially, but anytime you hear new ownership, you always just worry that like the team's going to get up and moved. That's always just something that I think is front of mind for anybody anytime new ownership comes along, because that is always an option if like a lease is up or if the club doesn't own the stadium. There's a lot of different moving parts with it, so just wanted to touch on that before we go into the next section, because that is we have two teams right now in those spots. It's them and Vancouver right now is also looking to switch ownership as well. So
all right, well, something to keep an eye on. Excited to see how this ownership group does. It's always interesting because I feel like it's kind of it's big news when it first happens, and that it kind of just seeps into the behind the scenes, right, unless something really good or really bad happens. Yeah. I feel like a good ownership group kind of just, you don't really
You should
know.
Never talk
yeah,
about
you should
that.
Never hear like, about you, it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah,
you should not be discussing it. Like, with perfect example is what we're talking about. Like, I'm literally actively boycotting our local team, the Minnesota Twins, because our ownership group is so bad, and others are doing it. Like, you can look around, go on Twitter right now, and like just look up the Pollad family and like just see what they're saying about that. Like there's an active, like we're at our lowest attendance, I think, it like since this new stadium's opened, and it's like calculated by fans. Like we're just, we're done with it. And it's one of the top end ownerships that is just not putting money into the team. And I feel like those are the situations where you start to talk about ownership where you're like,
exactly. Well,
you have the money, you bought the team. What, like, why are you not doing anything with it now, man? Like, yeah.
Move it or lose it.
Yeah, exactly.
They just want to flex it low key and they don't really care that much.
Yep.
Well, like you said, we will see. Curious to see what happens with Vancouver as well, but that's kind of most of what's been going on in the MLS weeks 8 through 9. It's definitely felt like kind of just where, you know, the ship is sailing at a steady rate. Yep. We'll see what happens with some of these new transfers as they acclimate to the team. It always takes, you know, a couple weeks for them to even kind of get going. One I'm excited about, who I think has only played, when I was looking at Fought Mob, 6 minutes, and I didn't catch him on there, Ryan Kent from joining the Seattle Sounders.
I didn't see that he played. He got in. Okay.
Yeah, he got in for just a little, but it was like 6 minutes. But unrelated, we will get into the grab bag where both Biz and Pix have something to talk about. I'm excited for Biz's. Not to say I'm not excited about Pix's, but I didn't really know much about this one, and it has to do with one of our U.S. men's national team, well, fringe guys, Reggie Cannon, not getting paid. So let's go get into the grab bag right now.
It's the grab
bag. Let me reach into that bag. All right. I've reached into the bag, but nothing that I have chosen has anything to do with me. But we are going to go with Biz's topic first. I teased it. The Boa Vista Saga. That is a Portuguese club. And the MLS connection. All right, Biz. What is so interesting about what's going on here? Are Boa Vista broke?
So Boa Vista, long story short, has been kind of indirectly connected with MLS teams now for a good long while. This saga that continued into today's MLS transfer deadline. There was the newest saga of the Boa Vista MLS story. I tweeted on the Something About Soccer podcast Twitter account that they are like, Boa Vista is essentially like the like terrible girlfriend that you just like for whatever reason can't quit, and MLS just like keeps answering the you up texts, like they can't quit them. Like I don't know why they keep going back to it, but
that's funny.
It just keeps happening. So to give you guys the full context of what's going on with this, so it all started with a player by the name of Reggie Cannon, who is a U.S. men's national team hopeful, made a move to Portugal. At the time, I think a lot of people were actually really excited about Reggie Cannon.
I was his very trajectory, excited about that.
You know, what his career path could look like, and went to Boa Vista and ended up honestly kind of having a nondescript campaign there. And Boa Vista hasn't exactly been like, you know, this killer team in the Portuguese top flight either. They've been relegated. Middling for a while. I think you're right now. I think they actually like are
17th, I think.
Yep. So it's not looking very good for them right now too, in the actual thick of things. So that, I think once we understand the full landscape of the story, I think that will even make more sense too of what's going on and how they're running the club. But so this all started with Dallas transferring that Reggie Cannon over to Boa Vista. Boa Vista owed money to Dallas and pretty much prolonged and kept pushing back what, from my understanding, was installments, and then ended up just never, those installments just never came. And then it came that they kept owing money and it kept coming up in the news. And I remember like thinking that, I'm like, how is that even like, when it first broke, like, how is that even a legal thing? Like, why is FIFA not stepping in? I don't understand. Like, that's something still, I haven't done the research on like when a team doesn't pay a transfer fee, like how that works. But for whatever reason, it just has never been resolved. Boa Vista has never paid Dallas. That at this point, think about how long it's been since Reggie Cannon played in the MLS versus when he ended up moving over to Europe. It's been several years. So, I mean, Boa Vista has had that, like, the actual, like, debt to Dallas for a long time now, to the point where I'm assuming that we're just, like, that's probably never coming. So that was how this all started. Then it transitions to a player by the name of Elbert Elise with Houston. Very good Honduran player. Probably, honestly, like, Houston had a couple players that I really value. I thought him and Coco Carrasquilla, both, like, really, really solid CONCACAF players that I think can play at, like, that European level. And Elise was one of those players that went and made the jump. Same thing. Transferred over to Boa Vista. Houston is still waiting on those payments. They have not come. So switch over now to transfers within the actual internal European network now. Feyenoord, Robert Bosnick, player that came over from Feyenoord to Boavista. Feyenoord is still waiting on payments from Boavista. They have not been paid for him. Today, Robert Bosnick has been linked with Real Salt Lake for a long period of time. Finally comes here, flies over for medical. They try to sell Robert Bosnick to RSL, had everything drawn up, ready to go. Bosnick wanted the transfer, gets here, completes the medical. Everything is squared away, ready to be signed. Boavista tries to change the terms of the deal.
No.
The deal falls apart. It is officially done. Bosnick has to go back home. He's going back to Boavista. It's over. I've also heard, on top of it too, Bogert tweeted and reported that Houston also, for the transfer fee itself, they've been like working where teams have still been trying to get money from Boavista. So they're saying like for the actual transfer fee that are being paid or for the outright transfer fee that that RSL was going to pay, Houston actually requested from Boavista if they could just be paid directly from RSL once the transfer fee goes through, and it was denied by Boavista. So, long story short, I haven't done a huge, like, deep dive into, like, the nitty-gritty of, like, what the financials look like for Boavista and what it looks like. But it is worth your time to go and look up this full story. I think Bogert actually tweeted out, like, on Give Me Sport to his publication about, like, some more information about the club itself. Because I know he follows European ball really closely as well and has some inner workings, too, with transfer networks and stuff over there. So he has a little bit of a better handle on it. But it is one of the most bizarre stories that is currently going on right now with, and this team being that they're in such financial turmoil when it comes to like where they're trying to offload players and they're in these debts to all these various teams, they keep coming up with MLS teams because exactly what we've discussed earlier about the calendar switch in these April pockets where they have decent players that they've brought in that they're trying to offload because they're desperate for finances at this point of the year. And so they're trying to get somebody to take them in, and then they're just being incredibly difficult and like cash trapped to work with. So they just continue to just do this to other teams and get, I mean, they're just digging the hole deeper and deeper as it goes. So it is as bizarre of a story from from transfer sagas and stuff that I can recall ever remember reading about. It is just too good to be true.
Yeah, that is bizarre. I'm looking at their transfers right now to see if they've been screwing anyone actively, but it looks like mostly it's free agents, but Pendik Spor. Yeah. And, oh God, can I pronounce this? Kessiora Nguku might need an email from Biz letting him know that they might not get paid. So that's pretty funny. Okay, so we will see. That is very, very interesting. And yeah, that's
bizarre, man.
Yeah, that is
absolutely bizarre. And I like I said, too, the last thing I'll say about it is just the fact that I don't know, like, you know, the full-on ramifications if they are being sanctioned by FIFA. Like I said, I like this just popped up and I felt like it was worth denoting because Bogert had mentioned it, and I just thought it was so funny that it needed to be brought up just because we were talking about transfers today. But I don't know the ramifications of what takes place when a team does this consistently. I feel like there has to be FIFA sanctions that like are applied to this team. Maybe that is why it's continuing to happen too, because they are being financially penalized in some capacity. I don't know. I would need to do a little bit more research to actually know one way or the other, but it is, I mean, the fact that it has happened to multiple, this is three MLS teams this has happened to now, like whether it's trying to buy or trying to sell and get money from them. And then one team for sure that it has also happened that had a player that was transferred in that the team tried to sell to an MLS team that had not yet paid the other team that they had taken him from. So yeah, just truly unbelievable.
Yeah, you cannot make that up. That's a really funny story. All right, picks. You have something for the grab bag as well. Going up or going over a little bit of the Liga MX Clausura.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so we missed a little bit of the match day. We were going to do a watch party of Monterrey versus León, which are two teams that would have been in the Club World Cup. One of them is just going to be in the Club World Cup now. But I just wanted to go over a little bit about what happened that match day. Mm. So I want to go over a little bit about the teams that qualified for the Liga MX, but also that match day in specific. So that match day, was really exciting because something that I had predicted to happen happened again. So in the past four games between the two teams, there have been six red cards. And there was another red card at this game as a result of James Rodriguez getting sent off for talking back at the back at the ref because he thought that Sergio Ramos was a little bit too aggressive with him. So just all these names that we see in the Liga MX coming, it feels like, you know, almost it feels like the MLS with DPs where we get James Rodriguez and Sergio Ramos playing and, you know, as a result getting sent off. But yeah, the game was really interesting. De Osa scored, I think, it was 2-0, and one of the big things is that helped Monterrey really have a really good seeding for the playoff, which Biz will explain in a sec. But before we go there, I just want to go over some of the teams that are into the playoff phase and some of the teams that missed out. So yeah. One of the teams that we have are Toluca, which is a big surprise. That's actually the team that Frankie Amaya came from. And then in order, we have some very common teams. And second, we had Club America, which is obviously one of the biggest teams in Mexico. Cruz Azul is another one, followed by Tigres, Necaxa, and then León, which is the team that we watched. And then the teams that are on the playoffs would be Monterrey, with that win that got them to that seventh seed, which, as Biz will explain, is very important later on. And then we have Pachuca, which is another team that is in the Club World Cup. And then we also have Juarez and Pumas that are fighting for the positions. And then one team that was left out by just goal difference was Chivas, which is a team that only signed Mexican players. So it kind of is telling about the development of the Liga MX, where, you know, a team that has just Mexicans aren't able to even get into the playoffs.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's really unfortunate. I think, you know, Chivas is a team that is criticized by a lot of people, but I think that one of the things that we can all agree on is that teams that, you know, want to develop the homegrowns is something that's really good. And it kind of shows that the Mexican development is kind of, you know, a little bit on a back end, unfortunately, with them not getting in. And another big team that wasn't in as well was Atlas too. So those are kind of the teams that missed out. I think Chivas and Atlas are kind of the biggest ones that missed out. And then, obviously, we didn't get too many surprises with the teams that qualified automatically. But I think Monterrey should comfortably be able to push on. So, Biz, would you mind explaining a little bit more about the playoff system itself?
Yeah, because it is a little bit complicated. I know. I feel like us coming from the Football Manager world, I feel like anytime somebody brings up, like, this side of the world for either MLS or for Liga MX, people just have a panic attack and don't want to deal because there is such a complicated playoff system. But I can assure you, if you follow American sports, the playoff system for Liga MX is actually not as complicated as it would appear. It's very similar to how the NBA operates. But look at it maybe through a little bit more of like a soccer lens, because most of the fixtures outside of the play-in games themselves are through two, like the two-legged fixture where both sides would get an opportunity to have a home game. But to start it out, the actual competition itself is called La Liguilla. So that is going to be a two-legged knockout tournament where the top 10 teams from the regular season, as Pixel illustrated earlier with the teams that he mentioned, compete for the championship. The top six teams advance directly to the quarterfinals, so they've already qualified. They're good to go. The teams 7 through 10 participate in a play-in round, which is just single elimination to determine the final two playoff spots, with the exception of, so how I mentioned with how it's similar to the NBA with the play-in games, 7 and 8 go head-to-head, and then that seeding will have the right to play the two seed. So avoiding that top seed in totality is kind of the incentive there. If a team loses in that first game, they also are granted another try at it where they will fall into the pretty much like think of it as like a loser bracket. And then the 9 versus the 10 will go head to head. Whoever loses that game is eliminated. The winner then goes and plays in that loser consolation bracket against the loser of the 7 and 8 matchup. And then those two go head to head to play one more single elimination to have the right to play that 1 versus 8 or 1 versus 10, excuse me. So whoever ends up winning between those two teams would have the 1 versus 8 matchup then. So how it ends up working out, they're trying to make it as easy as possible for the top seed to try to incentivize it. So they're kind of making those bottom couple teams that qualified and maybe didn't do as well in the regular season, they kind of have to go through the ringer in order to qualify. So you're going through, if you are in the ninth and 10th spot, you not only have to win your first game, you have to win a second game too and prove that you belong. 7 and 8 have that built-in buffer where if you're 7, you would have home field advantage in that first game. And then if you win that, you would be able to just go straight in. But then if you lose it, you also have the built-in buffer where you would play again against the teams that were below you. So it is kind of a unique situation. It's exactly like how the NBA does it as well with their play-in system. So it was actually inspired by it. I know Adam Silver for the NBA, too, has also mentioned about like how he sets up the league. He takes a lot of inspiration from European soccer, from some different soccer organizations as well. So it wouldn't surprise me if this concept from Liga MX and how they have this set up even inspired the NBA play-in. I don't have any facts to check that, but that's an educated guess because I know he's mentioned about soccer in the past. But I do think it is a really good way of handling it when you are allowing, you know, about half of your teams into the playoffs. Take it from us who consume a lot of MLS and we have so many teams making the playoffs. I think it is a good way of handling it when you are doing that way to make sure that everyone has their ability and opportunity. But I don't know. Do you guys have it? Do you think anything stands out specifically for that setup? Does anything like kind of for better or worse rub you the wrong way or anything that you is it a good format?
I really like the format because one of the big things is that it really prioritizes and gives like a good benefit for the teams that finish 1 through 6th, which is something that doesn't like 1 through 6 doesn't matter really much in the MLS besides its seeding. And especially with 3 games. Well, I mean, I guess it does matter with the 3 games in the MLS more so. But I think that it just gives them more incentive where just like the relief of being one of those top 6. You don't really get that in the MLS when you're one of the top 7, you know. It doesn't feel like the same relief. And especially because there's so many fewer match days played because the season is split. So it's like there's only 17 games where each game is so much more important than it is in the MLS where it's aggregated over the entire year. So I really like those play-in games and I wish, and I think one of the things that the reason that I think it would work in the MLS is, and the reason that it works in Mexico is that all these teams are very well supported and all of these have a passionate fan base. But in Colombia, we just have the top 8 teams go through to the playoffs. And then those top 8 split into groups of 4. So I think the thing with us is that we have some teams that are just filler teams once you get into the top 10.
Yeah.
But I think the MLS doesn't have that. And I think Liga MX also doesn't have that, where there's so much regionalism, where there's so much beauty between like these teams are really going to be fighting, especially once you get that home and away game. I think it provides so much more excitement. And then, you know, the teams that are 1 through 6th are also looking at those games to see, hey, we might have to face one of these teams. How good actually are they? How bad were they in the regular season? Are they actually something to be scared of? Because Monterrey's, you know, for me, it's surprising that they had to even be in this competition. And I think that they'll probably win their first game. But either way, the fact that they have to go through here is surprising to me. So I just think it adds more excitement. And I'm all about, you know, more of those playoff games where they just have more meetings. And I think that you also get more rivalries. And I think that that's something that the MLS needs to focus on more because we get those rivalries during the playoffs anyway. So having an extra game or two to really make it so that this really matters. You knocked me out the chance of having playoffs, you know, making those rivalries, I think gives so much more, especially when there's chances of having those, you know, Cinderella stories where let's say you're the 10th seed and, you know, you get it to the next match and you're facing the 7th seed. Can you do it? You know, those stories. And, you know, that's where you build those rivalries. If that 10th seed knocks out that 7th seed, that's how you build, like, fuck that team.
Let me ask you this then, Dill. So the one thing that I omitted that I wanted to make sure too to also illustrate is being that they do the two-legged ties and the fixtures pretty much all the way, I mean, all the way through outside of those single elimination play-ins. Once you get actually the field set and you're doing the 1 through 8s, the way that they determine it is actually it's not away goals or anything like that. The tiebreaker, if it is tied at the end, it's just the outright top seed just gets advantage and they move on. So if it's 2-2, so if 1 beats 8 and they're tied 2-2, even if, you know, it was 2-2 on the road, doesn't matter, top seed's going. How do you feel about that is like kind of the extra little added piece of things? Do we like that? Do we not like that?
I don't know. It's hard for me to say because I feel like my preference for if we're doing playoff system seeded-wise, it's like I don't even think you need a two-legged. You just go, give the higher seed the home advantage, and you just play one game.
Sure.
I guess it does. I think it's better for the seeds that are further apart. For instance, it's like the one seed probably shouldn't, you know, I don't like it. I don't like it really, but I think it makes sense for like a one seed tying an eight seed 2-2. Sure. It's like you should be asking the eight seed to do more because the one seed did so much more than you in the regular season.
Correct.
But
you're right. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever really seen that system before.
It's unique. That's
pretty unique. I don't like it really. That's just
it's like the
first.
Best case scenario too that I would say where it still allows, because like I feel like Liga MX looks at it kind of maybe in a similar lens of like what MLS does, where with our best of three, clearly the whole thought process is you're trying to get as many home games for playoffs because that's your revenue generator, right? So I feel like the same thing goes with the two-legged fixtures across the board with all Liga MX games. You're guaranteed, if you make it to another round, you're guaranteed another home playoff game, no matter what. And I think those are the money where you know that stadium that you are hosting, that's more ticket revenue you're getting. That's another, you know, that's more TV revenue that you're getting. It's all those things just keep getting exponentially, you know, moved forward more and more with each round that you make it. So I do think, but it's like the next best thing of like, well, how do we incentivize for the home team, right? Like, how do we at least give them a little extra something? Because yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's great. I'm definitely in the camp too with like how a lot of American leagues do it, where like home field and like how the geography is made up, I think is so significant just across North America and South America, where it is one of those things where it's like you're traversing time zones still in certain capacities with some of these, where it is significant that like having to travel and just play a single game on the road somewhere, that is a huge disadvantage. So like being able to pull a result, I think it says a lot about your team when you're on the road to be able to do that. But when you're giving that road team then a chance to pretty much rebound and do it where it's square and level, and it's not like an odd thing where you're going back the other way, I think that's like, it is the next best thing you can do. But I agree, I feel like it's giving a lot of, I mean, you're giving a lot of equity to road teams in Liga MX that way.
I'm not a big fan of it either, to be honest, but I think one of the big things that we have to also contextualize is that Mexico, just like the United States, is so massive where it's like these fans, a lot of those fans won't be able to travel to that game, and that could be a playoff game. So like one of the big things, and something that I always advocate for, and something that I've even criticized with the Libertadores, which the Libertadores is now one match, but it used to be a home and away game for even the final. But one of the big things is like, I think it kind of ostracizes some of the fans, where it's like, you know, I do think that the fans should be one of the most important things. So it's like, I would rather have those two games so that the fans could also have a home game too. Now, once we get into the, you know, what we do in the MLS with the three playoff games, I think that that's a little bit too excessive. But I think that the best solution wouldn't be to have the higher seed. I think maybe just go to penalties after a tie. But I am a bigger fan of having the two games personally, just because I think that that helps out the fans, especially in, you know, leagues such as ours and the Mexican league, which travel is such a big issue. You know, there's only like a handful of teams that I'm fortunate enough to get to, but even, you know, Biz over you can only get to like one or two teams, including Minnesota. So it's so hard for people to really get out to those games and, you know, be able to root for those teams. That's why the away culture and even Liga MX also struggles. So.
I definitely agree with what you're saying, because realistically, like, I could plan a trip anywhere in the States, but it's like if I'm doing one, it's like, you know, I could do a road trip exactly like you said, where it's like I wouldn't really have to do like a hardcore plan for like a Chicago or KC, where it's like I spend a night and I come home, like, you know, where it's I'm driving. But like anywhere else, it's like you're planning a weekend around it a lot of times, where it's like you're spending money and doing all this stuff for hotels and like all these extra things. So yeah, people don't think about that, like, you know, being over in Europe, where it's like you can drive, you know, usually like in a single day there and back easy, and it's like still have daylight left. It's like here, it's like if I have a game and I'm like, you know, the Galaxy are playing the Red Bulls, it's like Dill's not gonna be able to make that game on a drive. Like, it's, you know, it's that's a whole, you know, he's bunking with picks for a couple days beforehand to be able to make that work. Like, it's just like, it's just the reality of it. So it same goes with, you know, anything with me too, where it's like I'm centralized in the States, but it's like it's still, you know, 10, 12 hours both ways based on, you know, whatever mode of transportation you're doing. It's like you pretty much have to fly to these places to do it. It's like, and the same goes for a lot of the, you know, for a lot of these spots here in the continent, whether it's North America or South America. It's like, it's just, they're bigger than I think a lot of people think they are. So
even Boston, Boston, that's not terribly far for me. I would still need to get a hotel. Yeah. So I don't have to drive.
You can't do it all in one day. Right. It's with how the game time set up, unless you want to be home middle of the night. That's
exactly.
All right. Well, there it is, Liga MS, MX, Clausura, and the playoff system that is going to be coming soon. Before we get into our predictions, we did just want to mention one thing, an interesting competition starting this weekend, the USL Jägermeister Cup, the USL-only Open Cup format that starts this weekend. Biz, how are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I'm super excited, and I'll just kind of mention like kind of the details and see what your guys' thoughts are, because this is a brand new thing that is being started up. So competition uses a World Cup style format, starting with a group stage where teams compete with within regional groups, followed by a knockout stage. So that's including encompassing all of the USL, won the championship, and I think that I'm pretty sure that's it, because I think it's 38 teams in total, if I'm not looking at it incorrectly. Apologize if I'm wrong, if anyone's a USL diehard in here, but I'm pretty positive. I'm pretty positive that's right. I did a little bit of base research on it. But I'm excited for that. That's going to start over the weekend here. That actually, like, for me as somebody that's like super casual about my USL viewing, I'm trying to get more into at least, you know, paying attention to some of the YouTube highlights and clips to kind of like pay attention on the pulse of it. The tricky thing with me is being that I support an MLS team and have season tickets. It's like a lot of the game times fall right hand in hand on Saturdays with like when I'm watching or going. So it's like, it does make it hard for me to kind of multitask and do two leagues when they are on a lot of the same days.
Yeah.
But things like this, where it's like, they're going to have some of those games on a Friday. Like I'm all about it. Like I'll be locked in. It's on, for anybody that does want to watch or is curious about like looking at lower leagues, obviously the Jägermeister Cup being a new thing, but that this is the league that is tied specifically with this new promotion and relegation that's going to be rolled out here, hopefully in the next couple of years, that has recently passed. So if you want to watch those, from what my understanding, I was looking up internationally, if you want to get into USL, it sounds like the USL YouTube internationally might broadcast some games. So check into that, but ESPN Plus for all of us here in the States is the way to find any USL games for the most part. So ESPN itself owns that. So if you want to watch that, go and take a peek. But that is officially starting Friday and Saturday. So go take a look at the groups. Like I said, it is World Cup style. So doing that all within having their own competition that is closed to just USL, I think is a genius marketing move.
I
think
that's super
smart by USL. Big props to them for doing that. I think that's how you get more for me as somebody that has not watched a lot and doesn't have my own local team. That interests me. That's something that I think is really cool. So kudos to them for doing that. I think that's great.
Well, I am excited to see it. Yeah, I was looking through the group stages. That'll be pretty interesting to, and it seems like it's going to be like a whole season thing. It looked like the final's not going to be until October. So
yeah, stretching it out over the whole
which makes sense. I mean, really smart. Those are pretty big groups. And it did say, too, if games tied during regulation at the end of 90 minutes, they're going into an instant penalty shootout for extra point. So they're doing that type of system. So,
kind of League's Cup vibes a little bit.
Exactly. Well, that is going to wrap it up for this week's grab bag, as well as, you know, the main sections of the show. But before we go, we do want to do some predictions, though, you know, those things that you can get involved in the Discord, where each of us, now we pick three games where you predict the results of them, win, loss, or draw between the two teams. And then, you know, you guys can choose along with us, and you are graded, you know, next to us. We will go over a little records as well. But in terms of the picks, since I'm speaking already, I might as well go. The watch party is going to be, right as of now, Sporting Kansas City versus LA Galaxy on Sunday, May 4th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Obviously, big Galaxy guy here, so that'll be my first pick. I'm going to go with Galaxy over Sporting Kansas City as my first prediction. The second one is, I can't really be fake. I sold Austin FC, so I kind of have to predict them to lose. So Minnesota United over Austin FC, and then and that is in the same game week. And then my third prediction, what team did I not have nice words for? I feel like you just got to stay along that route. Who here? Oh, dare I do it? Who else am I selling on? No. What's a good one? You know what? I'm going to go with Bruce Arena's team of guys that just will run through a wall for him. San Jose Earthquakes over the Portland Timbers is my final pick.
Ooh, I like that.
Three West all Coast right. teams winning against so, all. Yeah.
Dill's picks last week, he was 1-2. Columbus over Miami was incorrect. San Jose over KC, which we both picked, was incorrect. That KC's like 5-3. There was 8 goals in that game, 5-3.
Yeah, that was
wild. Philly over Atlanta was your correct one. Atlanta is just down bad right now. Yeah, I don't know what is going on. So 1-2 for you, Dill. That brings you to your weekly record of 9-9. You are back to 500. Picks, what do you got for next week?
Yeah.
Or 2 weeks from now, I should say. Either or.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be doing all of the same match day, which would be this coming match day.
Okay.
Actually, no, besides the LA Galaxy Sporting Kansas. So with Sporting Kansas City, I'm going to go with Sporting Kansas City to give still something really? Against. Yeah.
Wait, what'd you say? Wait, say that again?
I'm going for Sporting Kansas City.
Oh, my God. LA.
Well, I need to beat you, so I need to pick up the points if you drop one. So
I need to do it, too.
I'm taking those Hail Marys. And then after that, I'm going with a safer pick, but not safe because it's the Red Bulls. I'm going with Red Bulls beating Montreal. That's a game that we should lock down. But, I mean, I said that about New England. I said that about DC United. So I'm not terribly confident.
Yep.
And then after that, I'm taking Charlotte versus New England. Mm. That should be a lock, but I'm not sure. New England have been looking better.
Okay. All right, so picks, you had a killer week last week. You were 3-0. Vancouver over Austin officially cashed in. Cincy over DC and LAFC over San Jose the week before us. 3-0 does pass Dill officially at 10-8. Picks has taken a commanding lead.
I think this game is stupid.
It's a dumb game. You think that? Wait until you hear my record.
Oh, no.
So my picks, I am also going to join the SKC over Galaxy train.
What
I
the think hell, the guys? Is, Come
you,
on.
You got to do it. You got to do it. You gotta do
it's original. These points, and you hear it.
Just copy picks across the board. So that will be my first one. I think just for the watch party, you got to do it for the brand. But then the other two that I will do, I'm going to do the Colorado Rapids over DC United.
Nice.
I think that DC is just not in a good place right now. So
after
I'm gonna
they just beat us is crazy.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep. You know what? I stand by what I said. And then lastly, I'm gonna do Seattle over St. Louis City. Despite me talking them up and buying them, I do think Seattle's playing really hot right now. So I'm gonna go with that. Go against what I said. But my last week was officially 0-3. Just going through it. RSL, the Diego Luna controversial red card that got rescinded, that put us just completely down bad and through that game. So that was super unfortunate. NYCFC over New England. New England out of nowhere decided to start playing good ball over the last 2 weeks. So Caleb Porter officially just like has widened the gap on my shit list for him personally. And then I also did San Jose over Kansas City with how San Jose had looked in the prior weeks and with what KC had looked like. So that has not gone well. So myself and the community, I'll also give the community's run through to make myself look a little bit better in the eyes of everyone else. I am sitting at 4-14 right now. We are down bad. I think we've had back-to-back 1-2 and 0-3 weeks. That has not helped the cause. And then the community also had an 0-3 week. That's back-to-back 2-0-3 weeks for them. And they're sitting on 5-13 in total. So we are down through it. I need a solid 3-0 week here to just bounce back and get back into the things. But
well, you at least have one of them.
It's we have one lock, one mortal lock. No, for sure. And then one last thing that I just wanted to ask, we don't have anything to grade. I was kind of looking through some of our picks. Nothing, a couple of year end picks. Does anybody have anything that you want to submit going forward for some hills you want to die on before we get out of here? You guys feeling spicy, feeling like you got something you want to submit? Don't need one, but
yeah, I want to triple down on all the talk that I do. Chupa Motang will end up as the leading scorer for the Red Bulls at the end of the season. He's got it right now at 4. I think they're gonna feed him easy goals. He's gonna get lucky 10 or 12 times, you know.
End of season, dude. I love
so you're thinking 10 to 12 still?
I could see that. He's got 4 so far.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that he will probably be the top goal scorer. I think.
Okay, so. I'm Picks. I'm writing you down that you're co-signing.
Mm-hmm. It was actually Picks' idea. He just was embarrassed to say it out loud.
All right, 10 to 12 goals. Choupo-Moting, note. All right. So got that, and I don't. That's kind of what I'm hoping for is with adding to these kind of as we go here. I mean, if we get like 15, 20, we got a nice little.
I don't even remember what I said before.
That's like, the best part is I'm not even going to bring them up. Like until we grade them, I'm not even going to bring them up. So we're going to go over these end of season, and we're going to have a solid little 15 to 20 grading scale end of year review show that I think will be pretty funny. So
I like that.
He can't score anymore. He just gets assists. He gets like 20 assists. He breaks Valderrama's assist record, but.
He just retires.
I feel like it's going to go like he doesn't score for four games. They feed him a penalty. He gets like a tap in. It's like he's one of those strikers where it's and then he'll have one game where he scores like three. And it's like, oh, he actually had a pretty good season when you average out the numbers, but he was just like so mid. But yeah, that's all I got. Is that it? How right we feel it? You. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
Good episode. I mean, longer than I expected for, you know, technically like a filler, you know, it felt like 2 weeks of MLS, but I'm really excited to see what happens in the next 2 weeks post transfer deadline day. I'm excited to see.
Teams are official now until the summer, so it's like we're in it now.
The full Bruce Arena San Jose team, LAFC, you know, retooling. I'm really excited to see some Robert Taylor and Julian Gressel in different environments as well. Oh, so,
Julian Gressel's here. I'm so excited.
Other than that, guys, thank you. Make sure to follow us on Spotify, YouTube, on our Twitch channel. Everything is in below. Join the Discord. We appreciate you guys as always. And until next time, we'll see you in the watch party and then the episode, our next episode 2 weeks from now. So thank you as always, and we'll see you in the next one. Peace.